We're talking about happiness in this hour. And when you think about all the millions of dollars Americans spend in the self-help aisle every year, it seems like happiness is kind of a national obsession. Maybe that's just what you get when life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness are written into the national DNA. But happiness has meant different things to different generations, as historian Darren McMahon points out.
If you go all the way back to the ancient Greeks, prior to Socrates and prior to the beginning of the classical Greek philosophy, you have in Greek tragedy this idea that you should call no man happy until he's dead, because happiness is what happens to you, and we can't control that. The world is uncertain. Our happiness depends on the whims of the gods, on fortune, on chance, and the idea here is that if you're happy, you're lucky, you're fortunate, good things happen to you. I try to argue in the book that actually, if one wants to understand modern conceptions of happiness, that you need to think very seriously about both the Jewish and the Christian traditions. One thing that happens, beginning with the early church, and you can see this in somebody like St. Augustine, Augustine has experimented with other Greek philosophies, and he's frustrated by his inability to attain happiness. And when he comes to Christianity, he adopts this idea that because of our original sin, because of the transgression of Adam and Eve in the garden, that if we have happiness at all, it will come in the next life, and it will come with the assistance of God's grace. Augustine and subsequent Christians sort of take happiness in this life off the table, but what that does is open up for them this field in which to project sort of the greatest sensual fantasies about the next life. So St. Thomas Aquinas in the Middle Ages can say that the pleasure that the saved will know when they gaze into God's eyes, as St. Paul says, is beyond anything we can possibly imagine. It will be like being continuously drunk, and you get this idea of ecstasy, of the total rapture of the next life. A critical shift in human expectations occurs in the 18th century when human beings begin to think of happiness as not something that can only be attained in the afterlife or only be attained in this world by an elite few who have supreme virtue, but rather happiness is something that we should have by virtue of being human beings. And I think slowly what happens is that happiness, in effect, becomes a kind of modern god or a modern type of salvation. We want it from all things and in all things. And since the 18th century, our expectations have only grown. Beginning in the 18th century, happiness becomes associated more and more with pleasure, and we think of happiness in these terms today, right? Happiness is something that puts a smile on your face, it makes you feel good. That's very far from an ancient Greek notion of happiness. It's very far, in some respects, even from the kind of assumptions that somebody like Thomas Jefferson would have. Jefferson certainly didn't have anything against good feeling. But if he says that happiness is the aim of life, he also says that virtue is the foundation of happiness. And Jefferson, like so many of the founding fathers, had a sense that without living virtuously, and by that they meant living in the service of the greater good, working for others, one couldn't be happy. And I'm not sure that we still share that idea today. I do think that the revolution that occurs in the 17th and 18th century is liberating in many respects. But the potential downside here is that it creates an obligation, right? We're suddenly responsible for our happiness. We're supposed to be happy. And when we're not, it becomes increasingly difficult to explain why. And so we're either left to blame ourselves for our inability to attain happiness, or we blame others or other things.
Dartmouth historian Darren McMahon. He's the author of Happiness, A History.